David Pearson, San Luis Obispo County. Mr. Briggs?
I can go ahead and explain our separation of functions right now before
okay.
we do musical chairs.
All right.
This is item 18, Administrative Civil Liability Order regarding Mr. David Pearson. And because this actually applies to the next two items, so that would include item 19 for Mr. Collegian as well. So because the next two items are regional board proceedings involving a more controversial enforcement action, we decided to separate the function of staff members presenting evidence for consideration by the regional board from those of staff members providing advice to the presiding hearing officer, in this case the regional board chair, and other regional board members. Assigning responsibility for advising the regional board members to staff other than those who will present testimony to the regional board members helps assure the fairness and impartiality of the regional board's proceedings. Accordingly, the staff participating in the proceedings have been separated into two groups. One group serves in a prosecutorial function in the proceedings and has assumed responsibility for presenting evidence to the regional board on this case. That team consists of staffers Jennifer Bidding, Chris Adair, me, I think that's it, right? And counsel Stephen Blum, who I introduced earlier. The other team, the advisory team, assists the regional board chair in matters involving conduct of the hearings, and the advisory team will provide advice to the regional board chair and other regional board members in their deliberations on the evidence presented in the proceedings. The advisory team consists of counsel Lori Oaken and technical advisor Harvey Packard. Consistent with the separation of functions, members of the prosecution team have been and will be treated like any other party before the regional board throughout the proceedings, and have not had any contact with the regional board members or members of the advisory team on matters related to these proceedings, except where those contacts are consistent with the limitations on ex parte contacts that apply to all other parties. And with that, we will change places.
Mr. Chair, while they're changing places, I'd just like to say for the record that when I talked to Mr. Blum at 10 o'clock last night to give him directions to our office, I discovered that he had not received copies of the submission that we got from Mr. Pearson last week, so I lent him my copies on which I had made some marginal notations, and to avoid any appearance that there might have been ex-party contacts through those notations, I'd like to read them into the record.
Go ahead.
On the Hatch and Parent letter dated June 28, 2005, on page 2, and by the way, most of these notes ended up in emails that I sent to the parties. On page 2, there's a note in the margin that I wrote that says, hearsay not admissible because not available for X, which means cross-examination. At the bottom of that page, the letter states, makes a statement about Mr. Emmerich's professional opinion, and my note in the margin says he said this in February. I had a few things underlined, which I'm not going to read. On page 5, in the discussion of the grubbing, I underlined a sentence that said, Mr. Pearson told Mr. Williams to go ahead with the clearing of the brush, and my note just said, Williams did clearing, which just was because I didn't realize that. On the next page, in the footnote 5, I have Exhibit X circled, and the note says what, which was because I didn't have copies of the exhibits and wasn't sure what that reference was to. On page 23, there's a reference to Government Code Section 11151, and my note says wrong site, 11511, Chapter 5, NA, which means not applicable. There's a July 6th letter from Joseph W. Deal of Deal and Rodewalt, who represents Jeffrey Emmerich, and my note in the margin on that letter says, doesn't say, has to be with subpoena, in reference to a statement in the letter that says the board failed to deliver an appearance fee with its subpoena. Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Pearson, you can sit up at this table with anyone who is assisting you. That would be fine. And is Mr. Emmerich here? Mr. Pearson?
Yes.
Is Mr. Emmerich here? Do you know if he was going to show up?
Well, it's my understanding he was, yes.
Okay, because I know we've had some extensive correspondence related to whether he was going to appear pursuant to the subpoena, and I just wanted to know where we were at in terms of his appearance.
I don't know that I have any information you don't have.
Okay. Does Mr. Collegian have any idea? None. Okay. All right. I'll go ahead and read this, Lori, to the board. This is something similar, board, that I read to you yesterday with a question in the end. So I'll read everything in the question once, and then I'll go down the line and ask each of you to respond to the question. Regional board staff presented a status update to the board on this matter in February 2004. Mr. Pearson's consultant, Jeffrey Emmerich, appeared before the board and answered questions. Following that hearing, the executive officer issued an administrative civil liability complaint and entered a proposed settlement with Mr. Pearson that was subject to board approval. The board considered whether to approve the settlement at its December 2004 meeting. Mr. Pearson challenges all board members as biased because Mr. Pearson challenges all board members as biased because of the December 2004 proceeding, because of that proceeding. At that meeting, the board decided not to accept the settlement proposed by staff. The board directed the executive officer to issue a new complaint and bring it back to the board for a hearing. The meeting minutes reflect that based on the information available to the board, the settlement amount did not seem appropriate. The board did not take any action to determine the amount of the civil liability. Mr. Pearson did not appear at that hearing, but we do not know why. He might have misunderstood the hearing procedures and concluded there was no reason to appear, or he might have decided not to appear for other reasons. Therefore, he did not present any evidence in support of the settlement amount in December 2004. This is the question for each of you. Do you understand that the December 2004 item was only to consider the issue of whether to accept the settlement, and that Mr. Pearson was not required to appear or present a defense to any allegations in the complaint? Dr. Press, would you answer the question?
Yes, I understand.
Mr. Daniels, did you understand the question?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Mr. Shallcross?
Yes.
Mr. Jeffries?
Yes.
Dr. Hunter?
I was appointed to the board on May 12th, so I was not a participant at that time.
And Dr. Villeneuve?
That the record shows I was absent from that meeting.
Okay. And I understood myself. Another question for all of you. As a result of the public testimony in December 2004 urging the board to reject the settlement, have you already determined an appropriate amount of civil liability? Dr. Press?
No, I have not.
Mr. Daniels?
No, indeed.
Mr. Shallcross?
No.
Mr. Jeffries?
No.
Dr. Hunter?
No, I have not.
Dr. Villeneuve?
I believe I was absent from that meeting also.
Okay. Well, have you made up in your mind, based on anything so far?
Have I?
Yeah.
I've read all of everything. All of the reports and the minutes of the meetings, and also everything that's been done on these two items.
Okay.
I've read.
But based on the testimony that you've heard about from the December 2004 meeting, just based on that testimony, has that caused you to determine, before you've heard today's evidence, any amount of liability?
No, actually I haven't.
Okay, that's the answer to the question. Does the public testimony you previously heard prevent you from considering the evidence before you today with an open mind?
No, it does not.
Thank you, Dr. Press. Mr. Daniels?
I always look at the information presented.
Okay, Mr. Shallcross?
No.
Mr. Jeffries?
No.
Dr. Hunter?
I believe that wouldn't apply to me.
Okay, and Dr. Villeneuve?
No.
Okay.
I'm open mind. I have a complete open mind on this because I was not party to these decisions beforehand.
Okay, and that certainly is my answer is no to those last two questions also. Mr. Pearson?
Might I ask a question?
Of course.
Okay. One of the things that had troubled me was, first of all, I appreciate being able now to have an opportunity to present my side of the issue that's before us. But the thing that troubled me was I was advised by a lawyer representing me at the time, Bill Walters, that there had been discussion with Mr. Briggs and the staff, and that if I submitted a check for $25,000 for the fine, there would not be a hearing. And so I thought at the time that by submitting a check to the board in the amount that the staff was recommending the fine to be, and also included with that a letter apologizing for my actions or proposed actions, it had been my understanding that that would be the end of the matter, and that at the very least there would not be a hearing. And so I was very surprised that testimony was allowed to be taken, because obviously my side of the story was not presented. And so I have some real concern, did then and do now, as to whether or not you actually held the hearing, and the reason why we waived a hearing and submitted the check and then it wasn't accepted. So I just want to make that on the record.
Okay, and you know, I understood that from the correspondence,
right,
I've reviewed, and I think there might have been some, maybe a misunderstanding as to what was going to take place at the December board meeting.
Apparently
we didn't really have a hearing in the fashion we are going to have today. And what happened then was the agenda item was for the board to consider whether staff's settlement with you, and it was a proposal.
I think
the board has to accept that or reject it.
Certainly.
You know, many times we accept it and we don't go on and the matter is concluded.
Sure.
In that particular situation, the board had decided not to accept it. People from the public are always allowed to comment on items on the agenda. We don't consider that to be testimony. It's not given under oath, and it didn't affect what we did other than not to accept the settlement. So today is the opportunity for all of the facts and allegations and defenses to come out before us, and for you to have, you know, your opportunity to persuade us in any way you wish.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Briggs. No.
Is it working now? No?
Yeah.
No? Sort of? We'll work on that. I did talk with Mr. Walters prior to the meeting in question, and
this is the December 4th meeting?
Right.
The December 04 meeting?
Right. Okay. And that was the one where the settlement was proposed.
Correct.
And my recollection is that I explained the situation just as you summarized. The only thing I want to add in addition is I predicted to Mr. Walters that there would be people showing up that would be commenting to the board as they saw fit in terms of the appropriateness of the settlement. And it was Mr. Walters' call in terms of whether, of how he chose to handle it, in terms of whether to show up in person or submit a letter, and we discussed that. So I thought it was pretty clear that there was still a matter pending before the board in terms of whether or not to accept the settlement, and that there would be most likely people presenting their views to the board.
Mr. Briggs, had you had any opportunity to speak with Mr. Pearson before today on any of these issues?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. You know, Mr. Pearson, it is a little unusual. Typically, people do appear when items like this are kind of tracking on the agenda. And I know Mr. Walter was in the audience on a number of occasions to watch an agenda item that had dealt with this issue. And typically, we see a property owner show up themselves, even if there's a lawyer there, just so they can watch what's going on. So it was a little unusual that we didn't have your presence because we would have liked to have heard you, you know, chime in one respect or another. So part of, I think, this the reason for the hearing is that we needed to hear what was going on from you directly. So, okay. Any other comments from the board? Shall we proceed?
Proceed.
Okay. We need to swear people in. Thank you, Mr. Jeffries. This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of a proposed administrative civil liability order regarding David Pearson. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by the board staff. 2. Cross-examination of regional board staff witnesses by discharger. 3. Witnesses called by the discharger. 4. Cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board staff. 5. Representatives of agencies. 6. Other interested persons. 7. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and regional board staff. Board members and the board's counsel, Lori Oaken, may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. The chair may limit repetitive or irrelevant testimony or cross-examination. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address, unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. And please stand, even if you don't plan to testify, but are involved in this matter. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
I do.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Packard.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe we've made any decisions on time limits.
On time limits.
So we can either do that now or provide unlimited time. It's up to you.
You can ask the parties how much time they expect that they need, or yeah. We can just start the hearing.
Why don't we do that so we can try to contain things? Mr. Briggs, how much time does staff need to present it?
And does that time include the cross-examination? Or
it does.
It does.
Yeah, we were
cross-examination
tracking.
And any time you need for a closing summary, so the total time you'll need for your entire case.
1 hour, please.
1 hour. Okay. And Mr. Pearson, do you have an estimate of how much?
I think an hour would be adequate
okay.
for my side as well.
Okay. And what we do, Mr. Pearson, is we track it up here with a clock, and then when the board asks questions, regardless of who's presenting their case, we stop the clock. So that's not an impinging on that individual's time. And then we restart it when the presentation continues. And then we also take cross-examination time off of that clock. So the staff is going to present its case. And when they're done, you'll have an opportunity, or the people assisting you, to ask questions of staff. And then the reverse will take place. You'll have an hour to put on your case, and then staff can ask you questions, or the people assisting you, just go back and forth like that.
That's fine.
And then the board may interrupt at any time just to ask clarifying questions. So that's how we will proceed. All right.
Mr. Briggs?
And Mr. Packard, I'll ask you to keep track of time, if you could.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jennifer Bidding of our staff will be giving our presentation.
But before you start, we do have this issue of the subpoena that was issued to Mr. Emmerich. Now, has Mr. Emmerich showed up yet? Okay.
I would suggest we address this when we get to the point in the hearing where his testimony is relevant and one of the parties or the board wants to hear from him.
Okay. All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Jennifer Bidding, and I'm the Stormwater Program Manager here at the Regional Board. This item is the Mr. Pearson's property located in Creston, San Luis Obispo County. It's the Administrative Civil Liability Order Number R3-2005-24. I have a map of the property just to give you an idea of where it's located. It is located actually a bit outside of Creston. And you can see that it's near the Werowero Creek. The Werowero Creek does lead to the Salinas River, just to give you an idea of where the property is located. The Werowero Creek is nearby. Its beneficial uses are listed there. I wanted to highlight wildlife habitat as one of the beneficial uses of the Werowero Creek. Another water body on the property is unnamed Blue Line Stream. Its beneficial uses are listed here as well, including aquatic life. The soil disturbance on this site lasted for 185 days or more, but 185 days is a conservative estimate. We believe the vegetation was cleared either September 1st of 2002 or earlier, and soils were stabilized by March 4th of 2003 or later, so that's a conservative estimate of 185 days.
Question?
Yes.
When you say the vegetation was removed, there's a number of ways that one could remove vegetation. Are we talking about a grading process of breaking soils and disturbing soils? Are we talking manual removal? Or
We were not present for the clearing of the vegetation. However, we believe that the discharger has testified that the vegetation was grubbed. The process of grubbing is removing the vegetation using heavy equipment. It usually scrapes the vegetation off the face of the soil, essentially. I'll show you some photographs so that you can see what the soil looks like after the vegetation had been removed.
Thank you.
As a follow-up to that, and some of the reading, in fact, there was a letter from a neighbor that I just read this morning that the grubbing was performed with the intention of removing brush, essentially. Then there were trees on the property as well, and they were not removed, according to the letter that we received.
I will be showing some photographs soon of the site, and you'll be able to see what vegetation was cleared and what remained.
And who did the inspection on September 1st?
I guess I should mention that there have been many staff people that have worked on this case since it's been going on for quite some time, since 2002. The original staff person conducting the inspections is Ryan Lodge. He's here today. He's been subpoenaed to the meeting. He was a regional board staff person conducting the inspections. He left the regional board for other employment about a year and a half ago, but he's been subpoenaed to the meeting, and he is here to answer questions.
Okay. It would be helpful with the slides that you show if you could give us an estimate of when the photograph was taken.
Absolutely.
And who took it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to start with a timeline. I'm just going to move chronologically through the series of events that have occurred. Beginning in August 2002, when the negative declaration was issued by the county. This included an RCD report, which is attachment one of the staff report. The neg deck was in response to the discharger's proposed subdivision of his property. This RCD report is important because it warns of a high erosion hazard on this property. The soils were of a high erosion hazard, so I wanted to point that out because I believe it should be considered in matters of culpability. The first staff inspection.
Because of this RCD report, did the negative deck have any mitigations with respect to this high erosion hazard?
Yes, sir.
What?
Would you like me to go into detail? Mm-hmm. The mitigations?
Yeah.
Unless you're going to get into the detail of that later.
Basically, the mitigations were called for best management practices that were required for the removal of that brush. Excuse me, I'm Chris Adair, Regional Board staff. The RCD report was an addendum to the negative declaration and went into detail about the erosive natures of the soil and the high erosion hazard, and that if best management practices weren't employed for erosion control, that the soil would leave the site.
So the negative deck then had erosion control BMPs. It also required any sediment control BMPs? Or?
I'll have to review it.
You can answer later if you'd like.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
I have a question about that, too. Did it recommend specific BMPs, or did it just say to implement BMPs?
It said erosion control BMPs were necessary.
Without specifying which ones?
I believe there was a requirement to consult with the NRCS and the RCD regarding specific recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. As I mentioned, the RCD report is attachment one of the staff report if you'd like to look at the details. So on September 20th of 2002 was staff's first inspection of the site and found that 39 acres had been cleared of most vegetation and there were no BMPs. On October 10th of 2002, staff sent a letter. This letter requested an erosion and sediment control plan. And then on November 8th, staff inspected the site again. Also on that day, there was an inch of rain. I'm going to be giving the rain data, which I obtained from the county of San Luis Obispo. I'll only be mentioning when there was an inch or greater of rain. So on November 8th, there was an inch of rain that day, and staff inspected the site. These photographs show Mr. Pearson's property and the area that was cleared. Some of the 39 acres that was cleared. This shows that vegetation was removed from the site, and you can see where rills have formed leading downslope toward surface water bodies. This next photograph is just another photograph of the same similar area where you can see the steepness of the slopes and the rills that have formed and the vegetation that's been removed. This photograph is of a road on Mr. Pearson's property, and this shows the water flowing across the road toward an unnamed blue line stream. So the unnamed blue line stream I referred to before is over here. And this photograph is of sediment-laden water entering the unnamed blue line stream area, so it's coming from here, flowing this way. On November 12th, staff sent a letter regarding the inadequacies of the erosion and sediment control plan. And then on November 25th, staff sent a notice of violation letter regarding the findings of the November 8th inspection and referenced the possibility of monetary civil liability for failing to provide effective BMPs.
I have a question. You just mentioned deficiencies in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
When did we find out about a plan? Or was there always a plan?
Well, the interesting thing about this site is that it didn't necessarily fit under the general construction stormwater permit because the discharger claimed that it was not a construction site, that this was being cleared for other reasons. Therefore, we requested an erosion and sediment control plan as opposed to requiring the discharger to apply for permit coverage and draft a stormwater pollution prevention plan. So erosion and sediment control plan was requested on October 10th. There was no plan existing before then. When we inspected the site on September 20th and found the condition of the site, that's what caused us to write the October 10th letter requesting an erosion and sedimentation control plan.
And when did staff get that plan or see the plan?
I believe that's in the staff report. We sent a letter on November 12th concerning the inadequacies of the plan. So we received it sometime in late October. Sometime between October 10th and November 12th.
Okay, thank you.
So after staff sent the NOV on November 25th, referencing the November 8th inspection, then on December 16th, there was a little more than an inch of rain. Also on December 19th, a little more than an inch of rain. And staff inspected the site again on December 20th. There's a lack of effective BMPs on the site at the time, and this photograph shows a road that was cut on Mr. Pearson's property and the erosion and sediment that crossed this other road that we've seen before in the earlier photograph, the unnamed blue line stream is over here.
I've got a question for you, and I may have the two cases mixed up, so you'll have to correct me if I do, but I read where a road had been cut prior to it's either Mr. Pearson or Mr. Collegian having purchased the property. Is that this road?
It's my
property. Okay, it is your property. So was this the road?
This is the road in question.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know the answer to your question as to when the road was cut. You'd have to ask the discharger that question.
Okay.
Could I ask this road, a staff question?
Yes. Speak up.
Yeah, this is a photograph of that's the existing road that had been abandoned. It had been there before the property was purchased.
I'm sure the discharger could probably answer this question, but as my understanding is that this road here was existing, and that this road here either was existing and then was bladed or was cut. I'm not sure the discharger can
We'll get to that answer. Mr. Pearson.
Follow-up to that also.
Go ahead.
I don't see any evidence of any grubbing on the on this site. That's what they usually remove. My impression I had in reading was that they're grubbing the site, which we've seen previously, which is where it's stripped of small vegetation. This area didn't look like it was
Only 39 acres were cleared of vegetation. Mr. Pearson's property is larger than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Bidding, I'm having trouble hearing you, so could you please be sure and speak up?
Sure.
As another question, you mentioned the BMPs being, I think you used, deficient or something. Were there BMPs at this time, the December time? Or?
At this time, there were no effective BMPs on site.
Were there no effective or were there
no BMPs?
In my opinion, there were no BMPs. The discharger would claim, I think, that there were BMPs.
Okay.
There was vegetation that had been pushed to the bottom of the slope. So when the area was cleared of vegetation, all of that vegetation was pushed down to the bottom, and we'll see some photographs of that. In my opinion, dead vegetation at the bottom of the slope is not an effective BMP.
So nothing that we would consider a BMP was...
That's like. Correct. Nothing we would consider a BMP was found at the site at the time.
The purpose for this photo, how close is what's depicted here to the 39 acres?
This is another area of the property. So the 39 acres that was cleared is not in this particular area. This.
But it's clearly upslope. But is it 5 feet above this picture?
Oh,
10 feet or... 100 feet.
No, it's actually on the other side of the blue line stream. So the blue line stream is here, and the grading is on the opposite side. So the grading or clearing would be on this side of the blue line stream. Okay. The purpose of this picture is to show that this road that was either cut at the time that Mr. Pearson purchased the property or cut before that, it was bladed by Mr. Pearson, and so the additional disturbance of this road caused this erosion to the blue line stream here.
Okay, so this is an impact unrelated to whatever happened on the 39 acres.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and we don't know if Mr. Pearson actually cut this road.
I do not know.
Okay, so this just could be the result of what a previous property owner had done.
Some action was done to this portion of the road. I don't know if he cut the road by Mr. Pearson. I don't know if he cut the road or if he just bladed it, which would mean maintained it, regraded it.
I see. Okay.
He did some disturbance activity to this road causing this erosion.
Okay.
This is a photograph of the water passing under the road that you just saw entering into the blue line stream area. You can see the sediments deposited here. Water would be flowing from here underneath the road this direction. This is a photograph of the blue line stream area. Here's the blue line stream flowing this way. And you can see there is some vegetation in that area and deposited sediments around as well. This is a photograph of the blue line stream area as well. And this is where I would say that there, in my opinion, these are not best management practices. Even though there's silt fence in this photograph, this is not being used in a recommended way. This silt fence here is shown right here, and then also there's another piece right here. So BMP manuals do not allow for silt fence to be used across the directional flow of a water body. Also, you don't use best management practices in a water body because the purpose of the best management practice is to keep sediment out of the water body.
When was this taken?
This photograph was taken on December 20th, 2002.
Okay.
And you said that this is the blue line stream?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks.
You mentioned it not being recommended that the silt fence be used this way. It would seem that it might even be illegal to put these kind of things across a stream.
Right, this would be doing work within a stream bed, which is not, which they did not have a permit for, you know, a stream bed alteration agreement to install these measures in the waterway. I think my microphone is dying. I'm speaking as loud, but I can't hear myself either. The silt fence going across the directional flow of water, that is a best management practice actually in the surface water body. Mm-hmm. And we don't allow people to do work within a surface water body unless they have a 401 certification or a stream bed alteration agreement. This is also a photograph of the silt fence in the blue line stream area. You can see that it's not effective for capturing sediment when used in a waterway because the water just flows over the silt fence. That's not what that silt fence was intended for. On December 29th of 2002, there was an inch of rain. And then in January of 2003, a cleanup and abatement order was issued for ineffective best management practices and discharging pollutants into state waters. On February 3rd, staff inspected the site and found a lack of effective BMPs. The cleanup and abatement order was being violated. These are the photographs from that inspection. And this gives you actually an idea for the area that I was talking about before. See this road here, this loop road, that's the road that we were looking at before, the one that goes up. This is the road here that was going straight in the photograph earlier. So you can see the proximity of the grubbed area being on the other side of the blue line stream from the road and the loop area. This is just the slopes of the area which was grubbed. And you can see here that there are fiber roll ditches that have been dug. I can't hear myself at all. Can anyone hear me? I'm talking as loudly as I can.
What kind of ditches?
These are ditches that were dug on the side of the hill slope for the purpose of placing fiber rolls in. So you would normally, their erosion and sediment control plan called for ditches here on the contours of the slope with fiber rolls in them. But as you can see, they dug the ditches, but the fiber rolls were never installed. There is a truck here with hay bales, and they were spreading straw. And this little area here, which you can tell is a slightly different color, is where straw has been spread there on the slope. However, you can see that there has been some vegetation that has started to grow, but there is still a large portion of the slope that it does not have any vegetation on it. In this photograph, you can also see the brush that was pushed to the bottom of the slope. So that's just examples of the dead brush there that remains at the bottom of the slope that had been cleared off of that slope, pushed to the bottom. Just a close-up of the hay that was strewn on the slope there. That hay would be considered an erosion control measure that's right there.
What are the lines, horizontal lines, across the face of the slope?
These lines are the lines I was referring to in the last photograph of ditches that were dug for the fiber rolls. The fiber rolls were not installed, however, although the erosion control plan did require or did call for fiber rolls to be installed. The ditches were dug, but the fiber rolls were not installed.
I also have a question. The hay that we see there, is that, would you consider that to be applied properly as well in depth and in terms of the extent of coverage?
The hay that was applied here is an effective erosion, we would consider to be an effective erosion control measure. It, of course, is just in a small area there, so but in that area, that is an effective measure to tear apart hay bales and place that on the slopes. I believe they were crimping it in as well to hold it down. This photograph shows a piece of silt fence here at the bottom of a steep slope. You can see the deep rills here. I believe at one point the discharger's representative claimed that these ditches dug for the fiber rolls were effective in and of themselves and that fiber rolls were not necessary, that those ditches were actually capturing the sediment. But you can see that there's quite a number of rills coming down in that area. This silt fence placed at the bottom, you can tell, has been overwhelmed, and you can see sediment deposited at the bottom of the slope. This also is a photograph. This is an example of the dead vegetation at the bottom of the slope. There's a best management practice right here. There's also a fiber roll right here. You can tell that both of those have been inundated with sediments, fine sediments here. This is just an example of the sediments coming down to the vegetated area. So this is the dead vegetation at the bottom of the slope. Sediments have come down here and piled up behind. The discharge representative believed that this was an effective best management practice because these sediments backed up behind the vegetation, and he claimed that the sediments here did not make it to the surface water body, which would be down here. But in the next photograph, you can see that sediments overflowed the vegetation area and did flow down to this surface water body area here. This is an example of a similar area that we were looking at before. Here's the road that was straight and the road that goes up that had the erosion on it. This is the blue, unnamed blue line stream here. And you can see hay bales have been placed here to prevent more sediment from making its way to the unnamed blue line stream. Here's where the sediment from this road has migrated toward the blue line stream here. On February 13th, a revised erosion and sediment control plan was submitted in response to the cleanup and abatement order. And then on February 21st, a letter, which was actually a notice of violation letter, was sent regarding the February 3rd inspection, the violations of the cleanup and abatement order, and possible assessment of civil monetary liability. These are photographs from that inspection. You can see that here's that loop road again and the straight road going that way. These are the areas that we were looking at before. This is the area where the hay was spread. You can see there is some vegetation, but still the slopes are not stabilized.
Question, what was the date of this inspection?
This is February 28th, 2003. Staff inspected the site.
Thank you.
And do you know the vegetation on that slide? Was that just vegetation that would grow naturally, or was that receding on the by the discharger?
Well, the discharger did aerially seed this site using airplane or helicopter, seeded the site. I'd like to remind the board that seeding a site is not a method of erosion control. Just by placing seed on soil, that does not prevent erosion. It's the vegetation that prevents the erosion. The site was seeded, and so this vegetation could have been a result of that seeding, or it could have just sprung up from a seed bank already in the soil. I'm not sure. You can tell that there is more grass or more vegetation growing in those rills, so that might have been the seed deposited, washed off the soil up above and growing in those ditches. These photographs were taken in February 28th of 2003. The site, we believe, was grubbed in early October or September of 2002. So just to give you an idea of how much time has passed since the site was grubbed.
Question? I think in the notes I reviewed, this would be the fifth inspection? That's your fifth trip out?
This time, yes. This is the fifth inspection.
Thank you.
This photograph is a photograph of this same sloped area. The lighter color material is hay or straw that has been placed in the rills to try to prevent additional erosion from occurring, and there is some vegetation. But as you can see, the site is still not stabilized. And just to give you an idea.
Jennifer, can I interrupt you?
Yes.
I'm over here. Straight ahead. Did they spread hay throughout the whole graded area or just in specific spots?
I think this photograph will give you an idea for the area in which they spread hay. It's the light colored material here, so that's the hay there. There's some here, here, in those rills, some here. So you can see the area where there was no hay spread, which would be this area and this area. So there, and you can see still the remnants of the rills coming down where there was erosion occurring, and get an idea for how much vegetation was growing on the site at this time.
Could I ask a question? Did I understand that these horizontal lines were dug for placing the rolls?
Yes, that's correct. The horizontal lines were dug for the purpose of placing fiber rolls.
Were they placed there?
No, sir, they were not.
They just dug the... that's an awful lot of digging without putting anything in it.
Yes, sir.
This was the consultant firm on this property is a well-established San Luis Obispo County company, isn't it?
Yes, the consultant and the discharge representative that we were meeting with on site when we conducted the inspections was Mr. Jeff Emmerich from EDA, which is an engineering firm located here in San Luis Obispo.
I didn't get them.
Oh, it was Mr. Jeff Emmerich of EDA. EDA?
CDA.
EDA?
Mm-hmm.
EDA.
They're the contractor for it.
Yeah, they are an engineering firm, a civil engineering firm here in town in San Luis Obispo.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. This next photograph shows a comparison between the burned area. There had been a fire in this area, and I wanted to show a comparison between the burned area versus the grubbed area. You can see on the left side of the photo, this is the burned area, and this would be the grubbed area. You can see that there's much more vegetation coverage in the burned area as opposed to the grubbed area. And actually, in discussions with the NRCS and the soil loss equation model that they have, it does demonstrate that with these soil types, the erosion that would occur in a grubbed area is higher than the erosion that would occur in a burned area.
And when did that fire take place?
The date of the fire is before
Was it during the time Mr. Pearson owned the property? Or
yes, it was during the time Mr. Pearson
owned. It was.
Must There were actually multiple fires, so that's why it's difficult for me to remember the date, actually. But this is another photograph of the site, and to give you an idea of how much vegetation covered, you can see there are patches of vegetation beginning to grow. You can still see the rills from erosion, and you can see the amount of sediment that has been deposited. This is some dead vegetation pushed to the bottom of the slopes, and this is a silt fence going around that area. The surface water body would be back here, and so this would be flowing this direction and flowing this direction.
I noticed the silt fence there is not following the contour. In fact, it almost seems to be going around protecting the brush. And is that effective to do it that way?
Well, I would say in this case, well, no, we would not recommend that silt fence be used in that way. That is not a recommended use for silt fence. But in this case, even if it were an effective positioning of the silt fence, you can see that it's been overmined by sediment, so it was not an effective BMP. The next photograph also shows silt fence here. And in this case, the water would be flowing this way. And so you can see the sediment that was deposited, sediment on both sides of the silt fence in this case. You can also see some more of the slopes up above. This is a comparison of photograph taken on the February 3rd inspection and the February 28th inspection. So you can see this is the same area that we've looked at before. There's the road that goes straight. There's the road that goes up to the loop. And here is the road going straight and the road going up to the loop. So you can see that there was hay bales placed here. And, of course, this is not how we would normally place hay bales because it doesn't follow the contour, which so normally would go straight across there. It's placed at an angle. You can see that after the rain, there was some rills that got larger and sediment deposited this way. The unnamed blue line stream is on this side or on this side of the road, so this flows in that direction toward the unnamed blue line stream. This is just an example of the depth. And in looking down this way at the hay bales here, and the water flowed this way across. And this is the unnamed blue line stream over here. Just a close-up of those hay bales and the water flowing this way to the unnamed blue line stream. Here's the hay bales on the other side of the street, and this is the unnamed blue line stream here and the sediment that was deposited here. Here's the unnamed blue line stream that sediment was leading toward. On March 14th, there was an inch of rain. And then on March 17th, staff sent a letter. That referenced the violations that were observed during the February 28th inspection and possible imposition of civil monetary liability. Then on April 13th, there was a little more than an inch of rain. And on September 19th, 2003, so some months went by before staff inspected the site and found that it had revegetated to the extent that soil was relatively stable and erosion and sediment controls were no longer an issue. So to summarize the timeline, in 7 months from August to March, there were six inspections, six letters, including three notice of violation letters, several hundred staff hours, and eventual soil stabilization resulted from revegetation. On May 10th of 2005, the executive officer issued the complaint and with a recommended civil liability of $125,000 that you have before you today. The basin plan prohibitions that were violated are listed in the staff report that you have before you, but I'll read it briefly to you now. The basin plan prohibits the discharge or threatened discharge of soil into any stream in violation of BMPs for soil disturbance activities in quantities deleterious to fish, wildlife, and other beneficial uses.
A question about that.
Yes.
Jennifer, the word threatened discharge, does that... what is staff's understanding as to whether there has to actually be a discharge that reaches a stream or a water body?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Stephen Blum, representing the prosecution staff. The prohibition clearly states that it prohibits both discharge or a threatened discharge. So if the discharger undertakes activities which threaten the discharge, it's a violation of the basin plan.
So even if there isn't any actual sediment or material that reaches a water body, but just the condition could lead to that outcome?
As long as the amount of sediment in question that is threatening the water body is in quantities that would be deleterious to fish, wildlife, or other beneficial uses. So, yes, even if it doesn't reach the stream, as long as the quantities are sufficient.
And how does staff come up with what factors it uses to determine what is a deleterious quantity?
Can I hold off on answering your question and proceed with my presentation?
Yes.
I think it might answer your question.
Go ahead.
Can I ask for just a clarification of what we just heard?
Sure.
So you're saying that even if it had not rained that winter at all, and therefore there would be no sedimentation at all, not having done the BMPs would be a threatened discharge and therefore a violation?
That's an appropriate interpretation of the language of the basin. I don't think that's what staff is relying on, however. I think staff is relying on the fact that significant amount of sediment reached the Blue Line stream and did, in fact, cause a condition of pollution.
Okay. Thank you for clarification.
Some of the impacts of excessive sediments on beneficial uses are listed here, such as choking spawning gravels and impairing food sources for fish, filling in rearing pools, which reduces the cover from prey, reducing the habitat, making it more difficult for fish to find prey, and also clogging gills of fish. So see, these are some of the impacts on the beneficial uses of sediments, excessive sediments. The maximum amount for this civil liability is $5,000 a day for each violation times 185 total days of violation, which brings it to $925,000 as a maximum liability. Just as an explanation of the prohibition violation, I think this might answer Mr. Chairman's question. There was severely erosive soil that was disturbed on the site. The disturbance was not mitigated with effective BMPs. The disturbance was in violation of best management practices for soil disturbance. It was discharged or threatened to discharge soil to state waters. Water quality was impacted or threatened by the soils, and discharges were deleterious to beneficial uses. In determining liability,
if I may, Mr. Chairman, just as a clarification, I think the photograph that you saw during the presentation with the two silt fences going right through the middle of the Blue Line stream shows that there was, in fact, discharge of sediment right into the Blue Line stream. So it's not just the threatened discharge that staff is discussing here.
I'd like to follow up on that because I'm recollecting from the reading I've been doing for the last 3 days, trying to plow through all this stuff. There's this Blue Line stream has been described differently by different, for example, the Soil Conservation District and others. There's references to the Blue Line stream as a swale. And in fact, I think that's what if I remember, it is the Art Trinidad from the county referred to it as in fact said it less of a stream but more of just a swale, which transports is ephemeral in the sense that it only carries water as runoff in storms. So, you know, it just, it seems to me there's a kind of a uncertainty about the nature of the stream. And as a matter of fact, I think that one of the staff reports said that they did not actually measure any of the sediment reaching the actual stream. That is the Herrero. Yeah.
It's true, we did not collect samples or anything like that. However, it is a blue line stream on USGS topographical maps, and blue line streams are given beneficial uses in our basin plan.
Also,
and they are waters of the state.
Right. It's clear that regardless of the nature of the stream, whether it's perennial or intermittent and how large it is and what you call it, it's still a water of the state.
What I'm alluding to is that if we had some, you know, tangible evidence that the sediment was actually transported into the waterway, I mean, obviously the water must have run down there, and I would assume that there is probably sediment contained in it, but there was no actual reference to what the volume of the sedimentation that was moved into the actual waterway, that is the permanent waterway. That leaves it kind of, you know, nebulous in a way. Yet I would assume, I mean, one would assume with the volume of water is being during those storms would carry down some sediments, but you know, I guess the volume of the sediments, if they reach the actual waterway, the stream, then is not necessarily has to be measured a quantitative measure.
If I may, Dr. Villeneuve, if I pronounce your name right, I'm sorry if I got it right. I'm not sure how if I pronounce your name right. It's Dr. Villeneuve?
Yeah,
okay, thank you. The focus of the prohibition in the basin plan here is not one of how much sediment actually got into Werwero Creek. The prohibition is on activities that cause or threaten to cause sedimentation that might get into Werwero Creek and eventually the Salinas River. Here you have a blue line stream, which is in itself a water of the state, and the basin plan prohibits sediment from even getting into that. And the basin plan prohibits activities and days of allowing a condition to exist that threatens the sediment from getting all the way down wherever it might get. But the fact of the matter is that what's prohibited is not dirt getting into Werwero Creek, but activities that threaten sediment from getting into the blue line stream, a water of the state, which can then be transported into Werwero Creek and eventually into the Salinas River.
Okay, that clears it up.
In determining the amount of liability, the California Water Code requires the Regional Board to consider the following factors, and these factors were considered: nature, circumstance, extent, and gravity of the violations.
We just can't hear this at all, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. But
is there something wrong with the microphone?
No.
Or?
Okay.
Just speak right into it.
Just pull the mic right up to your mouth.
Okay. I'll talk as loud as I can. Okay. In determining the amount of liability, the California Water Code requires the following factors to be considered, and these factors were considered. They're listed here and continued here. And staff's analysis of these factors are provided in the complaint as well as the order. I wanted to mention that very recently, as in just on Wednesday, so just 2 days ago, a meeting was held between Water Board staff, the discharger's representative, and the environmental community to discuss supplemental environmental projects. A few meetings had been held before to talk about the possibility, but we actually had a meeting where we actually talked about supplemental environmental projects. And I know that this is a difficult graph to look at and doesn't mean much, but I just wanted to demonstrate to you that we had some conversations. What we did here was list some projects, there are three projects listed here as high-cost projects, and this is the amount of the project in thousands of dollars, and then three projects listed here as low-cost projects, and this is the amount in thousands of dollars. We threw out other projects that were discussed that did not have a sediment discharge nexus or a watershed nexus. So these all had that nexus. And then we ranked them by voting 1, 2, and 3 in high-cost projects and 1, 2, and 3 in low-cost projects. The Water Board voted the discharger's representative as well as the environmental community, and we sort of have a total ranking over here. So you can see that two projects tied for number one in the high-cost and one project in low cost ranked number one. So I just wanted to demonstrate that we had already had some discussions about supplemental environmental projects, and that's why my staff recommendation is that the regional board impose a $125,000 liability by adopting the order, amending it to allow all but staff costs to be spent on supplemental environmental projects. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay. Anything more to staff's presentation?
Yes.
Okay.
I just wanted to follow up on an answer to a question, so maybe this is not on our nickel. I was trying to recall to answer the question about specifically if there were BMPs in the RCD report. The RCD report has specific BMPs, however, those are for the road grading activity and refers to the refers to specifics regarding the, it says section of road in violation of county grading ordinance, and it goes into detail as far as fixes for that, if you will. For the other areas, it's less specific, and it says there's potential for creating severe erosion. This would be for the grubbed areas or cleared areas, and this dictates that proper erosion and sediment control measures become an integral part of the development of these parcels. This is on page 4 of the RCD report. Goes on to say that extreme care to be taken to ensure that proper erosion and sediment control measures are employed, and this will be critical to prevent severe erosion of the soils on the project site and the subsequent sedimentation of the Werowero Creek. So that's the RCD report. The County of San Luis Obispo initial study summary environmental checklist says the applicant shall consult with the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service and the Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District in the preparation and review of the preliminary and final erosion and sediment control plans. Oops. Because, in another section, this is page 7, the RCD has specific recommendations to control erosion and sedimentation that will be implemented through required grading permit review. So I just wanted to give you the specifics as I was trying to recall that from the top of my head.
So for an erosion plan was required as a condition of approval by the county, not just our own requirement for a
correct
plan.
Correct.
Okay. Was there a date in there when this plan needed to be produced?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I think the clear implication is before grading activities.
That would make sense.
That would be the norm. And another, just a question. We had a lot of questions and interruptions, so could we synchronize our clocks here?
You're 38 minutes.
We've used 38 minutes?
No, you have 38 minutes left.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. On the calculation of the liability, could you go into more detail about that? I'm trying to back calculate the number. I see that. But in arriving at $125,000, do you have, for example, an economic benefits calculation? Do you have some sense of how much proper BMPs would have cost? I'd like to know if there's at least part of it that can be recalculated or can be duplicated, I should say.
I'll defer to Mr. Briggs. He chose the amount.
You were asking how it can be duplicated?
How did you come up with the $125,000 figure?
Well, it's a consideration of all of the factors, and in the worksheet, when we go through, we of course say what the maximum liability is, and then we indicate with each factor, you know, there's nature, circumstance, culpability, history, all those factors, and in the worksheet we go through and say whether or not this gives rise to a reduction from the maximum amount, and describe qualitatively how that factor affects our determination. And then another consideration is trying to look at other stormwater cases and what the board has decided with other stormwater cases, and seeing how this, we think this set of facts, it's always unique for each case, how it fits in with the history of the board in terms of appropriate level of enforcement action. And we arrived at this figure.
If I could add, we considered the culpability in this instance to be pretty grave because of the RCD report, because the discharger knew or should have known that the area was extremely sensitive and that without best management practices, the slopes would move.
Okay, I'm trying to find a way to recreate the penalty at the moment when you go from qualitative determinations up, down, and translate that into quantitative. I know that you look at past penalties as well. Past penalties tend to range in the 5 to 8% range of maximum. This is 13.5%. So I'm trying to get a sense of I need to be convinced here that there's a that I could recreate that numeric quantity, or that it's transparent enough that I could do it again, or nearly so. So what else can you do to help me get to that 13.5% or to 125,000, whatever it is?
Dr. Press, because there are a variety of factors that staff considers in making the recommendation and the board considers in adopting an amount, and these factors are all very discretionary, there aren't necessarily numerical calculations. There's things that we use for reference to try to maintain consistency among different enforcement actions, but there isn't a numeric formula that can be recreated. It's very discretionary. And as you see from the form we use in describing how the analysis was done, that we start from the maximum liability and consider culpability and toxicity and those factors.
Thank you.
You know, Dr. Press, if you recall, we had the board had decided not to accept the settlement, which was at $25,000. Staff came back with this number. Okay, and it's based on what we heard. The board may consider that to be an appropriate amount, either the original one or this one or
yep.
something else.
No, I understand.
So after we hear all the evidence, then we can get into this discussion.
About I figured since it was already on the table,
right.
then I would raise the issue.
Right. Okay.
I may have missed part of the question. If I don't know if you asked about economic benefit, but on page 8 of the complaint, it just says the Region Board staff does not have specific information that would allow staff to determine with any accuracy the actual amount of savings. So we didn't have any information.
Doctor, Mr. Shellcross.
That's okay.
Not yet.
I'll take it. You said at the beginning that this site wasn't graded for to be a development. Do you know why it was graded?
That's one of the differences in this case and others that you've seen before, is that this is not a violation of the construction stormwater permit, which is normally what you see me sitting up here for. So this is a violation of the basin plan, and so it is a little bit different. As far as what the site was grubbed for, there have been different responses to that question when asked to the discharger, and perhaps you could ask the discharger,
yeah,
but
okay,
the discharger claimed that it was for agriculture or for other reasons, not for construction purposes.
I have an amplification of the question about arriving at the amount. Why is it seemingly a higher percentage, although, again, there are no hard and fast ratios. Every case is different. Just before the economic benefit factor in the complaint, it deals with the degree of culpability, and we discussed here the fact that the discharger knew or should have known from the RCD report and the draft neg deck that there were severe potential problems. So when I mentioned history, we don't have a history of violations, but we had a history in terms of what should have been prior knowledge and awareness of severe potential problems.
Look, another question about the usage. Early on, we heard allegations that the site was actually being advertised on some website for sale. Did staff ever verify that that was indeed the case, that so while this was all going on, it was advertised for sales for these split-up properties?
I did look on the web and found property listed on Creston Real Estate, I believe was the web page, listed for sale.
Yeah, I can't hear that. Could you get a little closer to the mic and elevate
pretend
that little voice?
Across the room.
Okay, I'll shout. Sorry, you have to keep reminding me. I'll try to remember. I did look on the web, and I believe it was Creston Real Estate was the web page that I looked at and found the property on the web page. I don't have that. I didn't print that out, and that was a while back. I believe it was for sale at the time. It was featured on that web page, but it was irrelevant to this case, since the question at hand from my perspective is just whether or not there was a threat to surface water bodies. I don't know what the property was going to be used for. Some said it was going to be sold. Some at one time it was said that it was going to be subdivided for Mr. Pearson's children, and I've also heard that it was going to be used for agriculture and other things, but it really doesn't matter to us in this case, or at least the technical staff. We were just concerned with threat to water quality.
In a letter from Mr. Pearson dated June 28, 2005, or actually from his attorney, it does in fact state that and Mr. Pearson can amplify on this, but it does state that he decided to put the property up for sale after the events of this the grubbing took place. So it is apparently for sale, but I don't think that's really an important factor here.
Okay. Mr. Briggs, anything more for your case?
I don't think so.
Okay. You have 38 minutes remaining of your time.
Thank you.
And Mr. Pearson, it's your opportunity to ask questions of staff.
Okay.
And Mr. Pearson, if you would like them to put those photographs up, if you don't have any of your own, I'll ask them to do that for you. And could I ask you again, is Mr. Emmerich here? He is here.
He is here.
Okay. Could Mr. Emmerich please step up here and sit next to you?
Do we need to swear him in?
We do need to swear him in. Mr. Emmerich, would you raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think we erred when we said we were done. In other words, we'd like to use some of our time now before they proceed.
Go ahead.
I'd like to call our witness, Ryan Lodge.
Okay.
I just wanted to to ask Mr. Lodge if, since the photographs that I used in my presentation were taken by Mr. Lodge, if my presentation and my representation of those photographs were accurate.
excuse me. Yeah, my name is Ryan Lodge, 1160 Linda Drive, Arroyo Grande. And yes, they are accurate. I took those photos.
And Mr. Lodge, did you see a threatened discharge of sediment to a surface water body or a water of the state during your inspection?
Yes.
Mr. Lodge, would you agree with staff's characterization of what was depicted in those photographs?
Yes, I would.
What, was there anything you didn't agree
to? No. It was an accurate presentation or representation of what I saw on my inspections.
Okay.
Is there anything you would add to what staff talked about?
No, I think they covered it really well.
Okay.
Mr. Lodge, thank you. Mr. Lodge, what is your profession and background?
I am a licensed professional civil engineer. I'm currently working for an environmental consulting firm in Santa Maria. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to ask one clarifying question, if I might.
Go ahead.
Mr. Lodge, did you also witness discharges of sediment into the Blue Line stream itself?
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Mr. Briggs, any other witnesses for your case?
Yes. Mr. Emmerich, please.
Okay. What we are going to do is take a five-minute break before we do that, just so we can do whatever we need to do in 5 minutes. Okay, folks, let's everyone take their seats. We're going to reconvene our meeting. And Mr. Pearson, it's your opportunity. Wait a minute. Excuse me, Mr. Briggs. You wanted to continue with your case, and you had asked to put on Mr. Emmerich?
Yes, please.
As a witness?
Yes.
Do you want Mr. Emmerich to stay where he is or go to the...
That's fine.
Okay.
Just a couple questions for you, Mr. Emmerich. Did you consult with the USDA NRCS regarding preparation and review of erosion and sediment control plans for this site?
No, sir, I did not.
Did you consult with the Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District regarding erosion sediment control plans for the site?
No, sir, I did not.
Since that was a required mitigation on page 13 of the environmental checklist, why did you not do that?
The RCD report and the environmental checklist that you're talking about was for a proposed project and for proposed work to be done on the property.